Nate.
Welcome back to another episode here on Friends from Work Plus. And welcome to the, first leg of the final lap. That doesn't even make sense. This is the beginning of the end. But it's also, you know, maybe it's the end of the beginning.
It's both, I think.
It's both. That's the beauty of Born Again. I can't wait to get into all of this, like on a grander level. And
yeah,
what this might wind up being, like our Defenders episode was, just as fair warning to both you and listeners. I find myself having so many thoughts watching this, knowing Born Again is coming.
Mm.
And that's something that I don't, you know, when we started this rewatch, as a reminder, Daredevil had not, the only thing that we knew about Daredevil was that he showed up in No Way Home.
Spider-Man. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, and then we, you know, we kind of thought, okay, well, that means that Matt Murdock is here. And then I think the She-Hulk news came out before we ever knew that Born Again was happening. So my point is, like, I've definitely never watched any of the Daredevil series keeping in mind so much like what will or won't potentially return. So watching it this way has been kind of fun.
Right.
In that regard. And so I feel like forgive me if I jump around a lot in terms of future talk as we're also talking about this series from 2018.
I was thinking about how before Born Again comes out, I would love to put all of these episodes into some kind of manifesto. How cool would that be? We covered Daredevil season 1 and 2 in 3 episodes each, probably, you know, 90 minute episodes. And then
right.
This season 3 is about to be 3 episodes as well. This is part 1 of season 3. But before Born Again, we're going to have to definitely do like a larger conversation about Daredevil as a whole, obviously.
Right.
But maybe we could put them together and somehow make it a saga so far or something before that show releases. You know, I'm trying to think there's probably some cool way to package them all together and be like, hey, here's our 12 episode mini series on all of Daredevil so far. You know,
well, dude, you know, what's interesting is like, I've been thinking, are we going to get a Legends episode for Daredevil or Kingpin? And if so, you know, I mean, because that will be the most watched Legends episode in history.
Just to find out if it includes this stuff. That's it.
Right. And I even wonder, I mean, if I were doing that, I would do so very strategically. Like,
yeah,
you can pull clips from Netflix that are, here's Daredevil's origin. You know, here's a shot of Matt Murdock in a courtroom.
Right.
And still kind of allow people to live in their ambiguity. But yeah, I would be like, I say that because it'll be interesting to see even how we should cover that as we get closer for all of our folks that, because I know we have listeners that have never seen it and don't really intend to watch it.
I'm laughing because I was thinking about the exact same thing earlier today. Every time a new MCU project comes out, we put out a friendly reminder on YouTube, which is a catch you up on everything that's happened to this character before this new show. And I've really enjoyed doing that, but I was just thinking with what I just said, could you do that with Daredevil? And I'm thinking, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you would need to yet. We don't know if you would have to put anything from that Netflix series in there or not, you know? That's funny.
Yeah.
But at minimum, you are interested, we will have these episodes for you, and that'll be fun.
Yeah, that's true. And hopefully this can be, you're right. If this is in its own recap, we can kind of have something that will be that. But I'm excited to see what we find out as we get closer to that project. We also have Echo coming out pretty soon.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we ideally would have some kind of update prior to that, which is what, November?
Right. Yes. And they're all dumping at once, you know?
Right.
So that'll be interesting for us. Yeah. We got to figure out how to,
well,
how we would discuss that too.
I know. And before I get totally lost in future stuff, I also wanted to say, just to kind of kick us off here. The way that I did this, I finished my Defenders rewatch in kind of this day-long marathon that was probably ill-advised, and then rolled right into season three, and then finished that, the first section this morning. So I'm very much in this world at the moment. And, you know, just two things, which I think will kind of get us going here more substantively.
Yes, we're talking about episodes 1 through 4 today, just as a heads up.
Yes.
Continue.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I really thought it was going to be such a contrast, you know, going from Defenders to this, not just qualitatively, but also like thematically. And I think I both underestimated that and in some ways overestimated it.
Explain.
On the one hand, I feel like it was even more drastic than I thought it would be, how much better season three is, not just than the Defenders, but I think than anything else that came from the Marvel Netflix thing. And
yep.
And that's me saying, like, and I liked a lot of it. I mean, we talked about that in the Defenders, the projects that I did like. But yeah, I mean, it's so much better even than season one of Daredevil, which I remember coming on here and saying that for the most part, I thought a lot of the Daredevil episodes were better than a lot of the Disney Plus episodes that we had gotten to that point. So that's not a, you know, the bar was not low whenever I say that. So right. That was like, you know, just the mechanics, like I feel like the camera work is so much better and way less distracting than it was in mm-hmm. earlier seasons.
Yep.
Like the acting is better.
Yep.
Somehow the writing is better.
Yep.
So that's the thing where I underestimated how drastic it would be. On the other hand, you know, I think I am glad that I watched The Defenders, and I went back and forth on whether that was actually necessary, but it is interesting to see what threads are kind of picked up just for Matt emotionally. Like I feel like Defenders, there isn't a ton of arc there when you're in it for Matt, but looking back, you know, you can kind of see how that was his last attempt to hold on to the dual identities in some capacity, and how it was spinning out, and Foggy has to bring him his costume and then all of that. Again, I'm not saying any of that was super well executed, but I think that this show does what we always praise the MCU for doing, which is take the things that did work in something that largely didn't and magnify them appropriately to where I think you could sit down and watch season three cold and probably be fine. I mean, they give you mm-hmm. flashbacks and stuff, but I do think it's what I always say about Ragnarok is like it was such a great change, and it really changed the trajectory of the character moving forward, but not in a way that felt like a total break with what had come. Like it left room to still build on past things, even though the past things were not that great. So I am grateful that I'm kind of in the headspace here to kind of watch Matt Murdock's progression, because, and I guess this is like my final intro note, I think Charlie Cox is also doing his best work here. The subtlety he brings to this is what I love so much.
I need a chance to respond to one here points. Otherwise, I'm going to get lost in which one I'm choosing to respond to. Before we get into Charlie Cox's acting, because we absolutely will. But
I'm just so excited, Kyle.
I know. It's interesting that we are approaching this now from two different perspectives. You are in it right now with the rewatch. I did this rewatch twice, actually, but a while ago mm-hmm. now. And so
right.
I am basing a lot of this conversation off what my overarching takeaways were of season three, even though I have really specific notes from the first time I was in it like you. In fact, I think most of these notes are from the perspective of I truly didn't know what was going to happen. So I have notes like, who is this Ray guy? Is it a Defenders thing? Is it right. an agent? Because I had no idea at the time.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So it's just kind of fun because you're kind of reliving it for the first time, but you're in it. And my comments are going to be more from the zoomed out perspective because it's been a while since I've watched it. But dude, that was my major takeaway. That was my major takeaway when I was live tweeting my experience on the FFW podcast on Twitter, when I was seeing this for the first time. And when we did check-ins back in the day about this stuff, that's what I was saying. I really liked season one. It was a really good show, but there were clearly things that weren't perfect about it. So I didn't fully understand people's willingness to defend it or the nostalgia. Like, it's good, but don't act like it's so much better than everything they've done, because I didn't think that.
Right.
Then I felt like, man, season two actually kind of goes off the rails. The Punisher stuff is great. Anytime Matt is with Foggy or the Punisher or that dynamic and the courtroom stuff, great. But all the other Hand Ninja stuff was a disaster, in my opinion. We were totally losing focus. But yeah, when I get to this season three first batch of episodes, it immediately is prestige. It's elite. It's better than the first two seasons. And I don't even really know that at this point it's debatable. Season one, I watched and I just kind of told my wife about what happened because she didn't really want to watch it. She saw like a episode. And so I kind of just caught her up. I watched season two in The Defenders and basically told her like, no, this isn't your thing. Like, don't worry. I watched season three and that was the only one that I was like, okay, this is unbelievable television. You need to watch with me. So there is a clear defining line for me in everything you just said. So yes, the camera angles, the writing, I think the chemistry between Foggy, Karen, and Matt is better just by way of having a little bit of distance. I think they work better separately in their own roles than all three of them in the same room doing like the ha ha ha, let's get a bite to eat tonight at the bar. You know, like that doesn't work as much for me.
Right.
So like there being some tension between them is better. And then to come back to your third point, yes, I think that writing also improves Charlie Cox's performances here. And one of my lasting visuals, my screensaver, my screenshot, if you will.
Wow. Crossover.
I know. Yeah, it's not a screensaver episode. One of the things that my brain immediately goes to when I think about the early chunk of season three in regards to Charlie Cox's acting, my image of that is him in that basement working through stuff with the nun, who, no spoilers here, we find out later who that is. But that, the subtlety in his performance there and just the cleverness in the dialogue, Robbie, him wrestling with his faith is such a unique thing for a superhero project. Him wrestling with what his relationship is like with the priest and the nun, and then him having to rehab and what that looks like. And is he Daredevil? Is he not? Who is Daredevil? What's his relationship like with his friends? My image is of him sitting on the bed, beat up, talking to that nun in a dark, dingy basement. And I loved it so much. I loved how she cared for him. The hard truth that he needed to hear, I thought was perfect. I thought even exploring those topics was creative and unique and fulfilling and great. And his performance in that, in someone who's become so bitter, is believable because we've seen what he's gone through. It's earned, and his subtlety shines for sure.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that because those scenes are so good. And I was even thinking, you know, one thing I've kind of been thinking to myself whenever I talk about the born again of it all is I've asked myself with each of these actors, would I be excited to get them back in this universe or to have them carry over into the MCU, however you want to look at it. And as I first hit the scenes with Sister Maggie, I was like, wow, this is really great acting. Like it's kind of like a like the performance there, which, you know, is one of the first that we really see in the first episode, was one of the times I thought, wow, yeah, this is a leveled up thing than what we have been getting. And again, you know, having come right from Defenders to that. So yeah, I'm with you. That stuff, like, I not only love the Matt Murdock stuff and then her performance, I also like their dynamic. Like, I really appreciate that she kind of engages with him.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not, you know, it's not like a, like, I kept thinking it was going to be a, you know, she's just so frustrated and disappointed and like can't even engage. But I like that she actually talks through it. She'll like fight back.
Yes.
You know, when they're having these arguments.
I actually think it's a perfect representation of her beliefs in that she meets him where he is. And that's how I want it to be. That's how it should be.
Yeah.
And that was so cool to me. Matt is allowed to ask these crazy questions, right? These big questions, and she lets him be bitter at her, be bitter at God, be mm-hmm. bitter at his circumstances. She meets him there. And yet, yeah, she's stern with him when he needs to hear it and
right.
ultimately helps him rehabilitate. It's pretty cool. It's really cool.
You know, it's like we get these flashbacks that I think are so effective here, both here and stuff that we got in season one of Matt and the priest growing up. And you know that Matt needs someone that's going to actually go there with him for him to really like give respect. And not to say he doesn't respect other characters in the show per se, but it's like he's such a like an intellectual person in this very specific way that I love that like she actually like not only does she participate in that, she like wins at several different points, like kind of makes him the, you know, the lawyer that the whole show is kind of always one step ahead mentally. Like I like that she bests him and what that then tells us kind of about her and about where Matt is.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I want to slightly transition here to my other overarching favorite thing about season three. The thing that I think sets this apart from other television, the thing that makes this so elite. But I want our listeners to realize that, yes, we are breaking this into chunks. And so because of that, we're not doing an individual episode for each episode. And so I can't let this become 3 hours long. And so we can't get into every little detail. So some of what right. I'm about to say will come up again in the second part and the third part for sure. But I just mm-hmm. need people to know this is the beginning of it. The thing that I think makes this show so freaking good and genius is everything we just said about Matt, his relationship with the nun, with Foggy and Karen, his jadedness, his bitterness. But while that's happening, the parallel stories of both Matt having to rise back to power while Fisk uh-huh. is also slowly rising to power, and the way that this entire series becomes a 1v1, nothing else matters, it becomes a 1v1 of Matthew versus Wilson Fisk, and both of them wrestling with, like, what is the kingpin anymore? Like, how can you be a kingpin from jail? What is Daredevil to Matthew?
Right.
Is Daredevil even right. a thing? Like, am I willing to break Daredevil's rules? Am I willing to kill a bunch of people to stop Fisk? Should I just go kill him? And then watching Wilson Fisk beat Matthew throughout this series without ever actually punching him is the uh-huh. most genius call I've seen in television in a while. It becomes so captivating to watch Matthew just go dark and lose himself in defeat and bitterness, even though Wilson Fisk is not doing anything to him directly. That's the right. chill-inducing thing about this series. That's the thing that I want to capture in some Disney Plus shows going forward, is this idea that the villain can have tentacles that can be so overwhelming yeah, yeah. for somebody like Matthew that he can literally get to thoughts of suicide because Wilson Fisk is right. winning, and it's so overwhelming, and there's nothing he can do about it, even though he's never punching him. It's such a good picture of that, dude. It gets me so fired up.
No, I'm glad you said that, because that's almost, I mean, that's really the framing for all of the notes that I have here, particularly for the back two of these four, where I, you know, because the first episode is a lot of what we talked about with Matt and Sister Maggie. And then I think both of those first two, we're seeing the board kind of set. And then in these back three, it's like, I love the contrast in styles that Fisk and Matt have, in motivations, in, like, I think what I love here is Matt is at his lowest and he's having to kind of rebuild, but he doesn't even really know who he is or what he's rebuilding. And so it feels very flailing and desperate, which we then see reflected kind of in everyone that's trying to go against Fisk. Like, we see Foggy kind of taking a huge swing and running for DA. We see Karen, like, getting too close to stuff, and she's, like, kind of in trouble at work, and she's crossing lines with people she's talking to. In that way, it's a bit of a callback to season one, but here, the difference is, whereas they were trying to take down Fisk, here, it's like they're trying to frantically prevent him from reascending. And that's what I, like, what I love is he is, we never got to see that from Fisk, because by the time we met him in season one, he was already this hugely influential crime lord. But now we're seeing, like, step by step how he got there and what he's so good at. And that's where characters that are new here play such a pivotal role. And I think the biggest ones are Nadim and Dex. And I love that they offer two different visions of what Fisk's strengths are and the way that he's able to so clearly, but also so convincingly manipulate both of them to where, like, we know what's happening on some level, but we also understand why they're making the choices that they're making.
Listen, y'all, I'm so passionate about this. I've been waiting for this episode for so long. This is so good that you really need to watch it. If somehow you are a listener of Friends from Work Plus, it means you like this kind of stuff. Please give this season a chance. It's like, Greg, I don't think you've seen it. If you're listening, like, you have to watch this. This is unbelievable television because of what you're saying. It gets me fired up now, having not seen it in a while, because just remembering it. I'm going to go watch it. I'm going to go watch it again, because now I just want to see it. You talking should. About it. Okay. This is the other thing. It's also really, really, really believable and realistic from a practical standpoint, Robbie.
Right.
While Matt is having to rehabilitate, the amount of time they give that is so appropriate. Like, he's still working through stuff by episode 7 or 8. So, like, that's one thing Disney Plus just can't do. They don't have that kind of runtime. But I love the slow pacing of how realistic that would be, like, how long it takes him to get his powers back. He still loses fights. He's, like, doing trial fights to get that figured out. But also emotionally, like, having to slowly build himself out of that, like, heal relationships, all to only have it still get to a hopeless point, by the way. It's still going to not get better for a long time. But the pacing of that, while mixed with the absolute believability, in my opinion, of how Wilson Fisk would start going about this. Like, it is such a slow-paced rise that it's perfect. The fact that he, like, you know, eventually just requests, can I just have, like, this meeting with this person? Or, like, I'm just going to get to know a few people in the prison. And then that escalates to, you know, bribing some guards and blah, 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 and then getting his feelers out. And then it's like, we need to move him to a different prison. Let's just put him in this house where we can guard him. And it's like, wait.
Right.
He's moving into a mansion? Like, what? But then all of a sudden, it's so believable because, and it's not these episodes, but you'll get to the middle of the season and he's got art on the walls and he's making his own dinners. Uh-huh. And you're like, holy frick, how did we get here? Like, how did this happen? Right. Like, you can't let this guy do this. Like, no one would walk into that situation and go, this is okay. But they tell the story in such a perfectly paced way that you never along the way really question it. Like, you're never like, that's not possible. How would he not do that?
Right.
I don't know, dude. So while they're both rising to power or rehabilitating in their own ways, they're both perfectly paced in doing that. It's believable.
Yeah. Yeah. I like, and as an aside, I guess, one thing that I've noticed, and granted, I'm only a third in, but I feel like this is also just the right amount of gritty, if that makes sense. Like, I know we always kind of talk about what is that line and why does certain MCU stuff feel a little like sanitized when it comes to some of the violence and the way that's
depicted.
And why
does some of the season two stuff feel like unnecessary with ninjas slitting throats? Right. So it's like, just stop slitting everyone's throat. This is the happy medium. This is the better place.
It's like whenever it's used, I feel like it's used effectively. Like when you see, and in some ways, like it's more effective because I think in season one, you get so desensitized to it because it's like Matt is, his entire body is like shredded all the time. Not in that he's like buff, but in that he's like bleeding everywhere. And
although he
then
is
it's
fit.
Like the same way he is, right? But then the same with like the Fisk stuff, like it's so brutal. Whereas here, I think it's used sparingly but effectively so that, for instance, when you see Matt, like he's doing the neti pot and like spits out this huge chunk of like blood and whatever, like that's really gross, but also like that's a very memorable scene for me. And the fact that it then kind of shows like once he's like cleared out his sinuses, like his powers are starting to come back some, like he's getting his equilibrium. And like that's a really interesting and really like striking way of depicting that. Like in the same way that his hearing finally fully comes back and the first thing he hears is that Wilson Fisk has been released from prison. Like it's not only perfectly paced, those moments of showing progression here and here and here are, I think, just you, each one is unique and each one is memorable for its own reasons, but also moving things along. Like it's, you never feel like it's dragging or anything, even though you kind of, you like part of you wants Matt to get back on his feet and just be fully recovered. But I never feel like we're spinning our wheels or anything.
No. Just to also paint a picture of when I didn't know what was going to happen. Let me read a few of my random notes, because this actually gives you a glimpse into the emotional journey I was on when I didn't know.
Yeah.
And just through the four episodes, I would not be taking this many notes unless I was just glued in to wanting to know what was going to happen, which is another strength of this entire season. I feel like there's just enough balance of the cliffhanger versus giving us information that you just constantly want to watch the next episode to figure out what's going to happen, but you don't know where it's going.
Right.
And I love that. So like when I didn't know this stuff, my notes start as innocent as this, like Foggy got a haircut. Oh my gosh. Oh, they think Matt is dead. Who is this Ray guy? Oh, Fisk doesn't murder that guy? Matt's taking care of the dry cleaning. Oh, I love the monologue of putting him in jail. By the way, episode two, that monologue there. Oh,
yeah,
so
yeah.
And then I write a note like, Nadim didn't die? Episode three, Poindexter's going to be a bigger deal. Episode three, what the heck with this Dex pizza scene? And then I wrote, Matt, stop, you're becoming awful. In episode three. And then in episode four, stuff like you're saying, like Foggy runs for DA. What? Matt, you're stealing Foggy's wallet? What? Impersonating him? Jeez, it feels hopeless. So that's my point is like, that's where I'm at.
Like Matt is, I mean, he's doing stuff that I like wince at in this season.
Yeah. One of my other notes says like Matt's going to a really dark place.
Well, I'm even getting nervous, you know, rewatching it. Like, the little things that I don't even necessarily remember from my first watch, but that I'm like, man, like I was nervous that he was going to get that dude killed, that that's like in, he goes to visit the guy in prison to find out about the Albanians, and he's being super selfish there. And the guy's about to get released, and he's like a former client of his, or I guess an existing client. And it's like, man, like you are pushing, and this guy's not comfortable, and he's in prison, and you're about to like get him killed right before he's released, and you're not even
you don't care
thinking about that. Yeah.
My other thing with the pacing, Robbie, is not only is Matt becoming an awful person, like you're saying, and it's paced so perfectly that you're on this emotional roller coaster with him where you're like, I understand what you're doing, but you're also getting to such a dark place that I just can't follow. Padme, cue the Padme meme.
Right.
You're going down a path I cannot follow. But I also love, Robbie, a little bit of a spoiler here for the next couple chunks, that it never gets to a point. Like, I feel like the typical trope would be, okay, have Matt get darker and darker and willing to do worse things and willing to do worse things until finally he gets like a moment, a singular moment where it's like, no, I need to now be a good person. And then he would immediately shift and be like the hero. I love that you kind of like go down this dark path with him, but then it's like a sine wave, a slow growth out of it too. Like he has some conversations with Foggy and Karen eventually that aren't just like immediate turning points for him. Like he still is going to steal Foggy's wallet, right? He's still impersonating Foggy. And it's not like the light switch just all of a sudden flips and he's good. And I love that. So even that's paced.
Yeah.
Like you, it allows you to ride the wave with him. You feel what Matt's feeling for the most part.
No, the pacing is really the star of the show here. I think you're absolutely right. Like in all of these relationships, not even just the scenes that we have with Fisk and Matt in them. It's like when you look at, like the way that Nadim is introduced and the scene where he's like upset that he can't, you know, the car's been declined and they're trying to get the pool for the kid. And it's like they did a good job, one, of making me invested in that person that is being introduced in the third season of the show. And I have really like no reason to buy into right now. And so then whenever he's asking for the raise and like being given the duty to go to Fisk, like you kind of, you're feeling for him enough already to where then when Fisk creates this opportunity for him, you not only understand, there's even like a part of you that's like, yeah, like good for you, man. Like, even though you know it's going to go poorly, it's like that goes so like you even, and you understand why he thinks the things are okay, even though like from the outside, obviously, like Fisk is playing everybody, but you still, and you know, same with Dex. In some ways, even like it's less of that. Obviously, it's a totally different journey, but it's less of the like you understand why he does everything the way he does, and more like the pacing there. I actually love everything we've gotten so far with Bullseye. It's not a part of the show that I remember thinking was that standout. But as I'm watching it now, one, I think that it's a great performance. Two, I think it's, again, like you're saying, it's such a believable way to introduce that character that it's like I was saying in the Defenders episode. Man, I wish that whoever made the call to lean so hard into the ninja stuff had at least tried to get some of the more traditional Bullseye stuff out of the way first, because like that's what made season one so great. And I'm like, yeah, now that we're just getting back to like Daredevil is a guy that kind of has superpowers, but ultimately is just really good at a few things.
Well, and that Bullseye is actually just a guy who's super accurate at throwing stuff, including pitching and baseball, not a guy who like stands on motorcycles and hits, you know, guys with knives from 500 meters away. You know what I mean? Like you get in the movie
or like paper clips.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that. I mean, and that's like, what I love is I couldn't really remember how Dex was originally characterized. I mean, you know, I remember where it goes, but the first time you see him, there is like this impressive, like you're struck by what he's doing and how he's able to take out all these people. And it's always like a one shot and like perfect headshot. And it's like unnerving. And you're watching Fisk be actually kind of shocked by what he's seeing, which you don't see very often.
Right.
So that was like a great introduction. And then to see he's being so hostile to Fisk, he's seemingly upset about what happened. And then you start to realize like through the conversation that he's having with the department psychologist or psychiatrist that there's something going on, because you hear him repeat that, yeah, it's hard line a few times. And then whenever he talks about his girlfriend and you realize that it's just this person he's stalking, like all of that is like a kind of episode by episode build to where finally it's so perfect. And we end this first chunk. One of the reasons that I thought it wound up being a really good split is you end with now he's, you know, being blamed for this botched thing, like the transport of Fisk. And so Fisk now has perfect hook to align himself with this guy who is clearly like a psychopath, or become, you know, it's clear that he is a psychopath later. And I think that Fisk is really great at reading people and knowing their weaknesses and knowing what will motivate them. Like that final scene where it's like Matt goes in the taxi into the river, mm-hmm. and at this, it right before that is Fisk making the, basically establishing the connection with Bullseye, where Dex turns off all the cameras. And it's like you see the snapshot of where our two, you know, where our protagonist and antagonist each are. And it's a really effective look, well, both at the way that character's being integrated, Bullseye, and at just like the general contrast that we've talked about already, which is why I say like that is the framing here for me, I think.
So Bullseye is not my favorite part of the series, and I almost mean that as a compliment, because I think it's actually portrayed so well that I leave feeling like I need to shower. Like I leave feeling like he's kind of a creep, and it's almost right. Cringe, but it's supposed to be. And that's what makes me feel uncomfortable. And so I don't look back on his time super fondly, but almost in a good way. Again, the pacing with him, like you're saying, the slow reveal of the stalker thing and how kind of creepy he's becoming. And when you start getting the flashbacks of where it's coming from, it's a perfect balance of I'm totally creeped out by him, like his quote unquote girlfriend is, but also you feel really sad for him, like really bad.
Right.
And you want him to get fixed and get his help, but then you almost feel like, yeah, like he's wounded. Like Fisk is taking advantage of a wounded animal, you know? And it's so you feel awful, but it's portrayed well. It's just a weird ride with him.
It is. Well, and I think that the reason I'm so impressed with it here is almost all the Daredevil comics that I have read since this show came out. And
oh wow.
So it's I don't think now that I have I mean, I don't think that I really put that together until now, because I have watched the other two seasons as we've been walking through this. And I say that because Bullseye is kind of an interesting Daredevil villain to really weigh out properly. In some eras in the comics, it feels like he's very much Daredevil's nemesis, like kind of like a like if Green Goblin is to Spider-Man what Kingpin is to Daredevil, maybe like Bullseye would be like a Venom, you know, where it's like it's a nemesis. They have kind of similar skill sets in certain ways, but it's not like the guy that Spider-Man is kind of always diametrically opposed to.
Right.
So I think they do a really good job of that here, even down to, you know, what we get later. Right.
The story's not about him.
Right. Yeah, it's a perfect, like, because in the comics, I think ultimately, and I think that this was kind of a Frank Miller, something that he utilized well, at least in his initial run with the character prior to Born Again, where I think Bullseye works at his best when he is kind of he's still a guy for hire, but he's also sort of obsessed with getting Fisk's approval. Unlike any other villain that I can think of, there are times where he's kind of explicitly begging to be named Fisk's guy. And there's even a moment where he and Elektra are kind of vying for that position in the comics. And so I think that this is a really great way of reflecting that without it getting super campy. It's like you just see this guy that has always been misunderstood and, you know, definitely has some things very wrong with him. And then for someone that is such a master manipulator to come along and have the opportunity to speak one-on-one with this guy.
Well, and give him importance, as much as he can. You know?
Right.
I love that aspect of it too. Is like, yeah, right. Because, you know, you just talked the whole time about how he's kind of like the third wheel in the comics. And it's portrayed perfectly here where the story's about Matthew versus Wilson. But as this other guy gets involved, Wilson realizes how to manipulate him. And the worst thing that Dex could hear is that, oh, you don't matter to us. Like, this is not about you. Like, we don't care about you. Like, that's
right.
That's his like biggest fear. And Wilson knows right. that. So giving him the opposite of that, like giving him some importance by having him shut off the cameras, bringing him into his house, like unbelievable. He knows how to manipulate him. It's so good.
Well, and isn't it kind of, I mean, I just can't think of any other villain that's been portrayed quite in that way in the MCU, you know, where it's like you have someone that is not, like we talk about the various motivations of certain villains and ones that are just evil and ones that are motivated by some kind of past trauma. And there are bits of both of those here, but I think specifically the fact that he is himself being so played by like the real villain, even though he still is a villain and does awful things, it's just there are things in that portrayal at least that I would really like to see return.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just there's more to be explored there in the future. I like Daredevil having villains like that.
I agree with you, by the way, about the MCU comp. So don't get me wrong, but I'm now thinking about the fact that you asked me that question. What would you say is the closest parallel? You know where my mind went right away? Aisha from Guardians. Like someone who's like the story's not about you, but overcompensating for like this little slight stealing the batteries. And then it's like, oh, they're back. Like we're fighting ego, but you're still here. I'm trying to think who that would be. I don't know. That's my closest comp. What would you say?
Yeah. That's a good comp.
Like think about the way the High Evolutionary talks to her in the third movie. That feels similar.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in some, maybe Shocker, the second Shocker.
Yeah.
You know, is kind of a, but that's what I mean. And it's, you know, whenever I say that, it's clear that this is the just Spider-Man Daredevil fan in me. But I love villains like that. Like, right. I love villains that are, they're all, like, in Spider-Man comics, Shocker is just always around. Like, he's this guy that, like, Spider-Man's going to come across in a heist, and they're going to fight, and he's going to put him in jail, and he's going to break out of jail. But he's not the kind of villain that is going to destroy the world, you know? Mm-hmm. I feel like we need more of that in the MCU. Like, we're building out so much. We need more villains that are on, like, that level.
I know, which is why we constantly say we're in the phase of stop killing the villains you introduced. That's been phase 4 and 5 to me. I'm just trying to think of, like, anytime we got a, not even a villain, Robbie, but a guy who has bad motivations, for whatever reason, even if it's off-screen reasons, contractual reasons, they've just wiped him off the board. Like, think, this is so random, right? But even think about, like, Echo's father. In Hawkeye, they get rid of him right away. But why do we have to get rid of the guy who's just running, like, the mob crime scene, you know? Like, keep that going. Or Kingpin won't be that because he's going to become the main villain of certain things. So, yeah, I'm trying to think of who are the side characters that I would rather just have them hang around. But yeah, we're in the phase of killing all the villains by the end of the movie. So
it is. I mean, it's nice that there are hints of, you know, bringing Darcy back in kind of a different capacity. Same for Jimmy Woo. Like, I think those are all the right instincts.
Oh, 100%.
No, true. But like,
I'm saying,
I just
someone who's
see that.
Like causing problems. Keep them around.
And that's why what I would love with Spider-Man, which, you know, we talked about in our Defenders episode, and I'll always find a way to talk about probably, but I feel like the Watch trilogy set it up so well to do things like this while never really getting to do that itself. Like, we have the tone of Spider-Man fighting these one-on-one folks, but then like even Homecoming, the stakes are pretty high because they're going to get like Stark Tech. And then the stakes just kind of increase as they go with London. You know, there's going to be this massive amount of casualties if he doesn't stop back. And then No Way Home, you know, the whole like reality will break if all these people come in. And I love all of those movies. So I don't even really want them to be different because of how well they did set up us now. Like, we have the multiverse saga going in the background, right? Which is the, like, those are the biggest possible stakes we will ever be able to have in terms of just grand effect. So I would love for them to just not even try to compete with that. Like, let us know that there is the big threat going on in the background, like right. Thanos and the Infinity Saga.
Yep.
Except, like, unlike certain movies in the Infinity Saga, let that be it. Like, let that be the threat. We don't need the convergence to potentially destroy the entire universe or, like, whatever would have happened there. And the same, like, I would love a world where now either Shocker or Vulture or Scorpion or, you know, any of the characters that were kind of hinted at in Homecoming, like, we can totally return to that. And I think we could do that, like, same thing with a Daredevil Born Again. And I just think that there's a chance for us to really, like, take advantage of the scope of other projects and what that gives you leeway to do by then making these things smaller in scope, but just heightened in terms of the personal stakes. And this is such an example of how you do that, this entire season.
First, in response to that, you know what does that so well? The Spider-Man video game. I think about how Shocker, yeah. Herman, how he shows up really early on in the game. And even from the get-go, you never think this is like what the game is about. In fact, Spider-Man is just stopping him and they're dialoguing. Remember, like, Herman, I don't want to put you in jail again. Right. Why are you doing this? Like, you know that it's going to end poorly. But it's ultimately just he has to do it to do the right thing, but to also learn more about Martin Lee and about Doc Ock. That's who we need to learn about. But in the meantime, Herman, stop. I got to put you in jail again.
Right.
And yeah, it's exactly like the comics like you're talking about. So yes, I would love some of that. The second thought on the way grander MCU scale, which I don't know why we're bringing this up on this episode, but, you know, I think the multiverse saga from the get-go, when you and I were doing episodes pre the multiverse saga, it has natural built-in pros and cons, right? I told you years ago that there were things I was nervous about, and some of the things I was nervous about have come to fruition, which is like by nature, the saga is going to be a little more loosey-goosey, right? They're going to spin webs, pun intended, in all directions. Because all of it can be explained through a multiverse. And the story at times is going to feel a little less focused. These are things I talked about 2 years ago. Go check it out. But you also get the pros of that, right? Which is No Way Home. You get this idea that you can bring in these other projects and it can be such a fulfilling experience playing on the nostalgia for people of a character they love. You just would never be able to do that otherwise. So you get these massive wins like that, but you're going to get some of the wandering nature. And that kind of leads me to, once the multiverse saga is over, Robbie, I feel like some of the stuff you just brought up from Daredevil, some of these lessons you're learning, I hope that those will become easier for the audience. Like, I think Marvel should, once the multiverse saga is over, like once the Kang thing is done, which will be awesome. Don't get me wrong. I'm so excited for that. Once they close the chapter on that, though, I kind of do want the multiverse idea to just be closed and for them to focus on a tight story again. And I think one of the ways to do that would be at that point, introducing people like this. Daredevil and a guy like Dex, who's just around and is annoying and is causing problems, or Fisk, who you send to jail, but he somehow finds a way out. Like, I think all that stuff would be a little bit easier in a more focused saga.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, I do think it's never necessarily that I've had a problem with Deborah Ann Woll's performance here. I think that it is also leveled up. I think Eldon Hansen's is even more leveled up. I think this
Foggy's like night and day to me from season one.
Yeah, yeah. Like, to the point where I was watching this and I was thinking, okay, I feel like they finally figured out how to make this character interesting to me. Like, I feel like they never in the first seasons of the show and Defenders quite told us who Foggy was, not factually, but just like in the way that, like, his sometimes he's the like funny, awkward guy. Sometimes he's like wanting to be the guy that makes a ton of money. And sometimes he's the guy that like is the bleeding heart. And I feel like I never quite saw what they were wanting me to think was driving Foggy outside of his love for Matt and his care for Karen. And here I'm like, okay, I like this guy. Like, I kind of like Foggy, you know, kind of warrior going for the DA thing, having some conviction, having some confidence. I would like this version of Foggy around.
I think it was so clutch to get him out of that office and to get him in a different relationship. So it wasn't just the third wheel feeling thing, you know, when Karen and Matt had something going on, but actually to get him in a different relationship, which, by the way, is, I think, a highlight. Like, his girlfriend is pretty funny and like brings out good parts of him, encouraging him to run for DA, like all that stuff.
Right.
And then seeing him take some initiative there. Yeah. Totally more fulfilling and an easier watch. I enjoyed it a lot more. And then, yeah, his performance ages with that, right? It gets better because of that.
Yeah. And I bring that up because I do think Karen is better in this season, feels more natural in the reporter role than she did in season two. Like, things are better, but that's a character that I think we have just kind of played out at this point. Like, I think that the Daredevil comics, you know, because she, in the comics, she dies, and it becomes kind of a big Gwen Stacy-esque moment. And so that's why she has not been involved. But that was in the 90s. You know what I mean? There have been a lot of Daredevil comics since then. And Foggy is still around and he's always a piece of them. And Karen is not as much. And I think that that's...
You feel it here.
I think that's okay. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I think this is... And by the way, I think Foggy starts to feel a little... Like, as you go further and further, especially in more recent runs of Daredevil, just kind of out of, like, it doesn't feel like it fits as well.
It feels like it can be used well to tell that story of Nelson and Murdoch to get him started. But as Daredevil starts doing more and more stuff, it's kind of like, why do I need Foggy here? Really? Like,
yeah, well, just, and it feels like Foggy should, this is a lot of the stuff that I felt didn't work in the Defenders, is it's like when you have Foggy and Claire and Jessica's friend, Trish, I think, like all these people around that are not superhero people that are just kind of treating it like it's not normal, but it's just like, all right, like this, like I can buy that this one kind of super extraordinary person with this insane background that's like built into it is like willing to fight this like ninja army. But which, you know, obviously is not the way we thought that should have gone anyway. But that's one thing. But then to say that like Foggy is going to be in the room and talking about like resurrecting ninjas just is kind of a bridge too far for me.
It's, I can totally watch this entire series and enjoy it and appreciate what Foggy and Karen brought to this story. And at the same time, understand why they maybe wouldn't want to bring them back for Born Again. That's the summary. Like, I don't know that I need more of those characters going somewhere. Like, I'm not offended if they're not involved. It makes sense to me. While I think this season is very close to perfect, like very good, There are a few things that I think if they only reared their head in this season, like if this is all we ever had was this season of Daredevil, I think it would be like, oh, this is perfect. But because we've already had two full seasons of 13 episodes of some of this stuff, it leads me to question some of the things that pop up in Daredevil season three, because I'm like, have we gotten that already? Have we done that? One of the things I don't love, where I think this series isn't perfect, is I never love, as Pete would call it, our manager, the miscommunication trope. It's one of the things that frustrated me about Lost. Yeah. And so like one of the places I feel like I have to suspend belief in this series is like in season two, when Matt goes the whole time without telling Karen that he's Daredevil. Like he's afraid to tell her because it's going to negatively impact her life, when she's already going through the most trauma a human can go through. She's constant. It's like MJ in Spider-Man, where it's like, at some point, how, like, it's not benefiting her to not know. She's getting captured every freaking time. And Karen's going through so much stuff. So you're not protecting her. And the other part of it that I have to suspend belief, right, is that Karen is so smart and she's doing all this stuff and she's becoming such a badass, but she cannot figure out where Matt is all the time. At some point, you have to realize, like, she would be like, hey, are you maybe Daredevil? Because you're never here. Every time I'm in trouble, I get saved by you. Like, how are we not questioning this? So that's one area. So I guess that's the negative side of when the pacing doesn't work, right? Like, we just praise the pacing for all these other facets, but there are a few facets that I would have tweaked. Like, okay, Karen can confess that she shot somebody earlier. Matt can tell Karen about being Daredevil earlier, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's perfect, I guess is my point. That's my final closure.
No, I think that's fair. And I do also, you know, and I think this is on track with what you were saying. The other reason I'm okay with leaving Karen behind and Foggy, I think, is I do think this is a good, you know, I'll get into the pacing and see how it's executed, but I think it's a good place to leave the character, because it feels kind of, it's almost got that Batman Begins, Dark Knight Rises symmetry to it, where it's
this is Dark Knight
you're
Rises
closing
moment.
The loop.
Yeah.
It's like, I think with her, like in that one scene, having only seen where she pulls the gun, there's a little bit of like, oh, this is like the first time that Daredevil saved her. And you're thinking, again, kind of like Spider-Man and Mary Jane, is this going to be when they see each other again, he's going to show up and save her? But he doesn't, which tells you a lot about Matt right now and about it, just the dynamic there. But also she saves herself in this way that kind of does reach back to things she went through in season one. So I think that's, you know, it's an interesting place to take the character. It's an empowering thing that I like from a character that has had to be so reactionary so many times.
Yep.
But it's no slight at all to Devran Wall. I'm just not sure that there's any more room for that, especially because she had a lot go on in like the Punisher series, if I remember. So it's like, I think the character has been pretty thoroughly explored.
Oh, and don't get me wrong. Don't mishear something I just said. Like one of my first notes from episode 5 for next time is Karen is becoming a badass. Like, I way prefer this, for sure. And I'm glad, really quickly, that you brought up Foggy again, because I forgot the pacing issue I had with Foggy along the way, and I think I brought this up in those prior seasons, is just how long they draw out Foggy being like, Matt, you can't do this. You're going to hurt yourself.
Right.
You're going to die. And it again, that's where I lose some belief, where it's like you said, at some point, I don't need Foggy to try to be centering Matt, you know, when you're 2 years into it.
Right.
So I guess I bring that up to say I have had slight pacing concerns with each individual character, some little part of their arc. So,
yeah. And, you know, I did want to say I'm maybe said this in prior seasons, but I thought one of the big mistakes of the show was killing off Ben Urich as early as they did.
Right.
And I will say, while I still think that that's the case, what they have put together now in season 3, and I do think it took this long, of the partnership between Karen and Ellison as a reporter and publisher or editor.
I really like that.
Yeah, I love Ellison a lot too. And I think that one thing that's nice is I mean, the character even looks like the comic design of Ben Urich. Like, it feels a little bit like they just decided, okay, well, like, we had this great Ben Urich, but we wanted this moment for Fisk, which, you know, admittedly was a great moment. And so they're salvaging the bits about that character in terms of, like, his mannerisms and his years of experience and his, like, sort of cynicism. But then using Karen for the kind of, like, the part of Ben Urich in the comics that is this intrepid reporter that will never be stopped and is always after the truth. And so you wind up with kind of, like, and, you know, that was Urich in the first season as well. Like, you wind up with the things about Ben Urich as a character that I think work really well in the Daredevil universe, but split between two characters that I think do a really good job of embodying those respective elements.
Wholeheartedly agree. So episode 4 of season 3 ends with Fisk is getting to Dex. It's starting to work. Karen pulls a gun at a guy. And maybe most importantly, Matt wakes up and the cab is thrown into the river. So we'll have to find out what happens in episode 5. People have to tune back in to see part 2 of Daredevil season 3.
I know. I can't wait to keep going. I talked about how much I love that ending. I also can't stop thinking about, like, in terms of a screensaver moment here, the whole prison scene and just how well that shows Matt. It's such a, like, what we're talking about, and that's kind of why I wanted to note this on the way out here. Like, that is it. Like, that's what makes this season so good, because I never know what's going to happen in that entire scene. Like, I have no idea what's coming next. It's like a perfect classic Daredevil thing of so many people that he's having to fight off. But it shows us that he's not like season 1 Daredevil, where he's like on this totally elite level. Like, he still fights everybody off for the most part, but he has to rely on another guard to pull him through, and he has to make a deal with a crime boss. Like, it's dirty and it's sloppy. And that's where Matt is emotionally and physically. And then on the flip side, what that scene then shows us about Fisk and how much control he has, even while he is still a prisoner.
Right.
Like, the fact
call.
That you hear that his voice call. Over the intercom. Yeah. Oh my gosh. The phone call. Yeah. That's like, it's such a, like, that's kind of where I'm leaving this first chunk, like, tonally. Like,
if I remember right, it's that Fisk has enough power that he's actually getting a hold of the doctor to poison Matt, right? To inject him.
Right. Right.
Insane. That's when you start realizing how, like, hopeless it is. And then, yes, the actual fight sequence is an all-timer for Daredevil. I mean, it's like, it's one of those typical hallway fight scenes that are so cool.
Yeah.
That's why when he showed up in She-Hulk and did that, I was like, that feels of shades of this, you know, where it's like the hallway, guys coming out of the doors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the flashing red lights,
yep.
You know, especially in a season where you're not getting, like, the red suit Daredevil, like, little subtle things like that. Mm-hmm. And then the actual, just how hopeless, you're right, it feels for Matt. And the moment there when you realize that Fisk knows who he is, which, you know, now in some ways doesn't matter as much because he's thinking he's going to give up Matt Murdock, but it also does because he still knows. I mean, he used Foggy's ID to come in there. And it's like now, and his whole thing was like, y'all stay away from this because I want to protect you. It's like, right. Matt is being so reckless and Fisk is so in control.
Right.
Oh, man.
Tune in next time to find out what happens, right?
Yeah. I can't wait. I think I'm going to make Candace rewatch the first 4 of these with me.
How many of our listeners have seen all of Daredevil before? How many listeners have never seen it? If you listen to this entire episode and you haven't seen it, I highly recommend you go watching it. If you haven't ever tuned in before, why not? Curious about all that stuff. But again, we don't put our stamp this firmly on that many things. This is probably for most of y'all out there. Like we said, if you were like too, you know, sensitive about some of the graphic nature, yes, this still has graphic content. Don't get me wrong, but it is toned down from season 1 and 2. So maybe that's not even a hurdle anymore. I highly recommend watching it. And thanks for listening and supporting us on Friends from Work Plus. We're going to be back here talking about part two shortly. Part two of three total parts for season three. And then, as I said, as we get closer to Born Again, we'll look forward to doing some kind of Daredevil manifesto before he gets a new show on Disney Plus. Hopefully next year, if all gets resolved. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time here on Friends from Work.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.